भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सा विद्वत् पौरुषम् धाम व्रजमानः यथा रवि दुरासदो अधिधुर्दर्शो भूतानम् सम्भभूवः सभिवत्पौरुषम् धाम व्रजमानो यथा रविः दुरासदो चितुर्दर्शो भूतानम् सम्भभूवः साभिवत्पौरुषम् धाम व्रजमानो यथा रविः दुरासदो चितुर्दर्शो भूतानम् सम्भभूवः साभिवत्पौरुषम् धाम व्रजमानो यथा रविः दुर्दर्शदो चितुर्दर्शो भूतानम् सम्भभूवः सा हि वासुदेव बिभ्रात् केरि पौरुषम् pertaining to the Supreme Person. Dhamma, the spiritual effulgence. Rajamana, illuminated. Yata, as. Ravi, the sunshine. Durasada, very difficult even to look at. Difficult to understand. By sensory perception. Atidurdharsha, approachable with great difficulty. Bhutanam, of all living entities. Sambhabhuva, so he became. Ha, positively. Translation. While carrying the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart, Vasudeva bore the Lord's transcendentally illuminating effulgence, and thus he became as bright as the sun. He was therefore very difficult to see or approach through sensory perception. Indeed, he was unapproachable and unperceptible even for such formidable men as Kamsa, not only for Kamsa, but for all living entities. Report. The word Dhamma is significant. Dhamma refers to the place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam 111, it is said, Dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhaham satyam param dhimahi. In the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no influence of material energy. Dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhaham. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by his name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia immediately becomes a dham. For example, we speak of Vrindavan dham, Dwarka dham, Mathura dham, because in these places the name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Godhead are always present. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a dham. And thus he becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies, but also people in general, are astonished to observe his activities. Because he is unapproachable, his enemies are simply struck with wonder. As explained here by the words, Virasadho Titur Darsha. The words Paurusham Dhamna have been explained by various acharyas. Sri Vairagavacharya says that these words refer to the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijayadwaj says that they signify Vishnu Tejas. And Sukadev says Bhagavat Sarupa. The Vaishnava Toshini says that these words indicate the influence of the Supreme Lord's effulgence. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that they signify the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Lord himself, then, is unapproachable by the senses, is unapproachable by any means other than devotion. That the living entity in the material world, they try to do everything through the senses. That is their, entrance into the material world, the portal into the material world. Not the vegetable portal, but the, you know, the round hole, something that you see like on ships. So then, the senses are the means by which the living entity perceives the world. They are not perceived through something else. One can say, no, I go by the subtleties, but how do you know the subtleties are there? Right? You're seeing them through your eyes. Right? Or you're feeling them through the life airs. And then the movement of the life airs that is felt, so touch. So still, through sight, through touch, through smell, taste, these ways, any way that you're perceiving anything in this material world is coming through the senses. Other than that, there is no connection of the living entity to the material world. The living entity can't observe or see the material world except through these senses. So, then the point comes is those senses cannot get you the Supreme Lord. Through any of these gross or subtle means, one cannot know the Lord. It is impossible. He's unapproachable, unknowable. All these things mean that through the senses, by any mechanical process, one can't see the Supreme Lord. One cannot demand. Right? One can say, I've done so much service, I sat here and did kirtan, or I chanted, why the Lord's not revealing? No, it doesn't work like that. So why I can't see the Lord? So the point is He reveals Himself. Right? The Lord, by revealing Himself, then He can be seen. Either He can be felt, He can be seen, He can be heard, whatever it is. Then He is available to the senses, but when He reveals Himself, so that's very important. He descends. This is known as Adhokshaja. The Lord descends. Now the interesting principle, the interesting point, is that in the levels of consciousness, he only descends down to the level of the mind. Right? Means the consciousness, when it's in the pure state of love of Godhead, then He is manifest there. Then on the transcendental platform, the transcendental senses, we can perceive the Lord. In the material world, then He descends. Then through knowledge, through realization, we can experience the Lord. Or He'll come down to the level of the platform of religion. So He's also known as religion. God is religion. Because all religion is meant to know Him, so He will function in that level. Then can be known. Now one may say, but you know, in the form of the deity or the name, in these ways, then He is also known, and we are able to perceive Him by the senses. Right? So one may make this point that. But I am able to see the Lord with my senses, I'm able to touch Him, I'm able to... But how is that possible? Right? One is because he has descended, the deity has been installed. Only the smartest are foolish enough to think that their mantra and tantra installed the deity. The Vaishnavas know this by the devotion and by the request of the devotees. Then he appears. Right? So then we can say, okay, then we accept he has appeared. But still, I can see him, I can touch him. Like this. So how can you say he only comes down to that platform of the level of consciousness of Manamoya, or the religious platform? Because the name that we chant has to be the name that is given in the scriptures. You can't chant any name. The form of the deity, he'll only agree to be installed in forms that are accepted by the Shastra. Right? And he is only understood through the pages of the literature, through those that are accepted in the Parampara, those are according to the scriptures. So in other words, without the scriptures, then there is no manifestation of the Lord. So coming down to that platform, then through those scriptures, then you know. Then through the senses, through one's wealth, opulence, family, whatever one may have, all these then can be connected to the Lord. Otherwise, it's not possible. One can't make up one's own process. Right? The devotee may say, we don't care for the rules. That means we don't care for the rules that indicate something other than Krishna. Or we don't actually, we don't care for any interpretation of a rule that is something other than Krishna. The rule is not the problem. We're only interested in what is connected with Krishna. So this is an important element. This is the junction between the two. Us on the material platform and the Lord's descending, this is where they meet. They meet at this point. Is what is done according to the scriptures. Otherwise, they don't meet. Plenty of people may think they are meeting God, they're sitting down, they're doing so many things. They will take anything that's subtle, call it spiritual. Right? People will get together, hold hands like that, maybe be quiet, maybe someone will play something on their guitar, and they'll sway a little bit, you know, light a few candles, light some incense, and they'll say it was very spiritual. All it was that they weren't totally absorbed in gross sense gratification, and it was a little subtle. So for them it was very impressive. Right? And it made a great impression on themselves. So they call it spiritual. Had nothing to do with spiritual. It was just some little bit more subtle sense gratification. Because they're still hearing, they're still touching, they're still smelling. You know? But this time they took the trouble to do that. Normally they don't smell, they don't see, they don't think, because they're so busy trying to get sense gratification, they don't notice the sense gratification they have. So when it's some subtlety is there, it's called spiritual. Right? So this is the problem. It's in the material world, then this is the scope. The whole scope of consciousness within the material world is within anamoya and panamoya. Within sense gratification and extended sense gratification. It doesn't go beyond. When we talk about the level of the impersonal realization, that comes up to the mental platform for the materialists. It won't go beyond that. They never get to the platform of realization. It doesn't come. Platform of realization, the platform of performing religious duties on that platform of the mind only comes when it's connected with the Lord, when it descends. Otherwise it doesn't. So this is the difficulty, is that the materialist thinks that they have come to a very highly elevated platform when they haven't. Because within the material world, you know, you have your spectrum. And what's at the top, they'll call very wonderful, and what's at the bottom, they'll say is terrible. For those who work on the platform of Hoksaja, or what descends, the Lord's mercy descending, then whatever's in the material world is terrible, and what's connected to the spiritual world, then we start the beginning of reality. And what is fully spiritual, the Lord Himself, His name, His form, His qualities, His pastime, those then, that is considered most wonderful. So this is the platform here. So the Lord can only be known. So where the Lord is, then that becomes His dham. So that means it's a place, it's a devotee. Dham means a place, because its manifestation is there. And so where the Lord's transcendental potencies are manifested, that is called the dham. So we see here, and Prabhupada explains, that place where the Lord's pastimes take place, the devotee's heart, those places where the devotees are performing their pastimes, all this becomes dham. Because then this is where the Lord is manifest. So we see here is that very wonderfully is manifest with Vasudeva. So the Lord is manifesting within his mind. And because his mind now and his heart have become the abode of the Lord, then his effulgence also becomes very, very great. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur then points out, because this effulgence is manifested, then we know that the Lord is present. Like that. Because that Vishnu Tejas is there, then it becomes very nice. The Lord is manifest. So the devotee then has to be very careful to see that whatever he's doing, it's in consideration of this. That we're not going to take our activities and make them Krishna conscious. By engaging them in Krishna's service, Krishna descends into them, then they become spiritualized. This is a very important point. If we think we have made it spiritual by our activity, then this is precocious. Krishna gives us what karma nyevadikara say, ma phaleshu kadachana, ma karma phalahetu abhor. Because of me, this result is coming. No, because of Krishna's mercy, it's coming. So if we endeavor to do something, and we endeavor to do it to please Krishna, then it becomes spiritualized. Otherwise it doesn't. Means if the purpose is to please Krishna, then even if at the moment we're not thinking of Krishna, it gets done. But the potency will be less. But potent it will be. Right? Therefore you see many times new devotees, only been a few days, few weeks in contact with Krishna consciousness, they can go out and preach to someone else and effectively make them into devotees. Because the potency is there. How much potency? Here we see Vasudeva, potency is very immense, that even nobody could see him or understand him. He's so powerful. But in any case, that potency is there. So that's the point, is when you please Krishna, then that potency is manifest. The Lord descends into that activity, into that name, into that activity, into that endeavor. Right? Into that thought. But it's not because we thought it or we did it. No. That's the point. Krishna is very elusive, not so easily caught. Right? After a while, you know, a Krishna consciousness. Then we figure, okay, it's easy enough. I think of Krishna, I do this, I do that, I have Krishna. But unfortunately, even someone like Mother Yashoda, she thought she had Krishna. But when she takes the two pieces of rope and goes to tie them, she can't make the knot. Right? It's not long enough. Right? Then, of course, then I endeavor, I get another rope. Right? Ropes are quite long. So if it was two fingers short, two fingers means this wide. If it was two fingers short, then if I stick onto that another 10-foot rope, surely there'll be no problem. So tying that, okay, I lose a little bit at the end. Okay, 9 feet, 6 inches I have left. Okay, then when I go to tie it, it's still 2 fingers short. Right? So that's the thing. When then Krishna agrees, then he is caught. So that's the elusiveness. So it's not that by the rules you have caught Krishna, but it's only through the rules that you'll catch Krishna. This is the interesting point. This is why sometimes we speak very highly of the rules, and sometimes we speak very not so highly of the smartas, who are expert in the rules. The rule doesn't catch Krishna, but your endeavor to please Krishna through the rule, that catches Krishna. So it's endeavor to please, and you're pleasing him through the medium that he agrees to be pleased with. Right? Means our speculation won't work. We please him through how he says we should be pleased. He will be pleased. Then making that endeavor, knowing that that pleases him, then it's there, right? If we have a friendship, then we know something pleases a friend. Then we will make an endeavor to please them through what pleases them. Isn't it? You won't, okay, if you go to the store and you think, well, I know he likes this, but I don't like this. I like that. So better I buy him that. Right? If I buy him what he wants, it'd be artificial. You know, I should come from my heart. And, you know, I don't like this thing that to give him. I like this thing, so it would be more proper for me, more natural that I will buy what I like, even though he absolutely doesn't like it, but it would be more appropriate. Would this be how anyone would think? No. One would think, this person likes this, whether I like it or not, doesn't matter. I'm trying to please them, so get them something they like. Then they'll be pleased. So whether we like the rules or not, that's not the important consideration. If we're talking about a friendship or affection, because if our goal is love of God, then whether we like the rule or not, that's not the consideration. Consideration is Krishna's pleasure. Then endeavoring for Krishna's pleasure, we're pleased. Right? Means your friend is pleased when you give him that gift that they like, even though you don't like it. You're happy, because the gift isn't what's important. It's the exchange that's important. Right? So their happiness is your happiness. So the rule is not what's important to either us or Krishna, but it's the sanctioned medium through which to please Krishna. So making that endeavor to present an activity done through the proper channels to Krishna, then his pleasure with that is our pleasure. It's very down to earth, very practical. Right? Many times it's said rules are not practical. No, rules are the most practical. The mind is what's not practical. Right? Our likes and dislikes are not practical. Right? We want something that's always difficult to get, right? Anything worth having is rare, right? Who wants something common? Right? You want something special, rare. Right? So is that logical? No, it's very hard to get. Something very common is easy to get. Right? Then there's no obstacle. No, we're willing to go through all this difficulty. So therefore, a practical, you know, rules are practical, because rules just say how to get from point A to point B, that's all. But the mind doesn't like that, because it wants to go all over this way, that way, taste this, go there, experience this, like this. So that's the thing, when the mind then is brought in line with the rules, then it's easier to deal with. Right? And then when it finds satisfaction in that, then more. Then, when it goes beyond that to satisfaction in Krishna, that's the perfection. Any questions on this? Or comments? No? Yes. Mentions the point Garbhodan Samskar, that that's for the higher orders, and then you will attract such a soul. But then a discussion was there that no, the rules aren't important. What's important is the affection between the husband and wife. And that will, you know, be successful. It may be successful, so then how to look at this. So success may be there, that there may be conception. If that's one's goal is simply to conceive, then yes, without some affection between the husband and wife, there won't be conception. Right? There has to be something, attraction, to create. It means from attraction you get attachment, from attachment you get endeavor. So if there's no attachment, then, and that's what's called love in this world, is attachment, material attachment. That's called love. So then there'll be endeavor. Otherwise, there won't be endeavor. Right? Because unless there's material attachment, it won't happen. So now, if that's all that one is looking for, is how to conceive a child, and that's all, and it's the mutual combination of, you know, the love of this world, then that's okay, but that's generally not recommended for devotees, because devotees are supposed to act on the platform of Brahmins, and this mentality is for Shudras. Right? It's a Shudra mentality, it's not a Dvija mentality. Because Dvija knows that the purpose of any activity is the Lord's satisfaction. So now one would have to contemplate, how is it that a couple loving each other and then conceiving a child is pleasing to Krishna? You know, I mean, how is the mechanics of that? How does that please Krishna? That you have love for one another, but that love, how will that please Krishna? Well, Krishna is given the rule of Garbhodan. So that means that you are endeavoring to please Krishna through that. That's where the connection is. Because otherwise, conception of a child is between two, you know, the gross and subtle body. It has nothing to do with the soul. And anything short of endeavor of the soul doesn't attract Krishna. Krishna is not involved. So Krishna says he is that conception that is according to religious principles. That means Garbhodan. So, and if it's not according to that, then he says, I am Kandarpa or Cupid, which is love, the god of love that creates conception. But he doesn't say that that activity or that conception is him. He is the impetus. Right? But if it's planned according to Garbhodan, then Krishna says he is that. So it's just, what do you want? You want something that's inspired by the god of love, or you want something that is Krishna. That's the choice. The devotee always has the free will. They can make their choice as they like. But they should know what they're saying. Because just love isn't enough. Because love is based on what? Love is his attachment for the other person. That means a gross and subtle body. Because souls don't need to conceive children, right? So the conception is happening between the gross and subtle body. The experience is happening there. So then that would mean that attraction for the other, attachment for other, what is it based on? If it's not based on religious principles, then it's based on material love. And material love, we understand, is lust. Lust for enjoying the senses. Right? That means then the person loves the other. Loves the other means I love to touch you. Right? Isn't it? I'd love to touch you and, you know, and be touched. So that mutual exchange then is called love. But how can that really be defined as love? It's not the soul. It's the senses. And what is the impetus of the senses in that situation? It's simply to experience the senses. Right? So how can one say that's enough? Enough for what? Conceiving a child? Yes. But that's what the animals also are experiencing. You think the animals don't have attraction for each other? Right? They don't experience the same? It's exactly the same experience. There's no difference. An animal conceiving a child, their experience within their mind is exactly the same as a human being. There's no difference. From one species, it's exactly the same. There's no difference. It's an illusion to think there is. Prabhupada says, everyone thinks my sex life is special, is unique, is different. No, it's all exactly the same. There's no difference. So on that side, you can get, you know, you can take it farther and break it apart more, and it becomes more and more, you know, absurd and all these things. So it's not enough for devotees. That's why the first birth is called animal birth, because it's based on that attachment to the parents. Only because of attachment, a child is born. Now, if it's based on religious principles, then you're talking about something else. Because attachment is a mixture of passion and ignorance. That it is something wonderful, it is something nice, it's based on the body, that's ignorance. That it's desirable, that's passion. Goodness means this is the process. So the process must be followed. And you follow the process, and this way, Krishna is pleased. And if Krishna is pleased, will be pleased. There's that idea that something will be lost if I follow the rules. The taste, the experience won't be as deep. My sense gratification will be less. But the point is after that sense gratification, the knot of material existence is tightened and your anxiety increases. The next morning, they can wake up and they will be in anxiety. Guaranteed. But if they follow the rules of Garbhagan, that's a different thing. Because then you're working with the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness doesn't end in distress. Mode of passion does. And mode of ignorance is illusion before, during, and after. So these are real things. These are real mechanics. These aren't something subtle as the target. This is real life. To say that no, this or that's real life, that's illusion. What the scriptures say, this is real. So it takes with that step, that endeavor, that faith to do that. Then it actually does. If you really love the other person, then how can you exploit them? If you love the other person, then how is it that you can exploit their body? That's what you're going to do. You're going to touch them the way you want to touch them. You're going to get them to touch you the way you want to be touched. That's called exploitation. Exploitation, if it's mutual, is called friendship or love. If it's only one-sided, it's called exploitation. It's the same thing. It's just semantics. Huh? So that's the thing. There's no real difference. So that's the difficulty. So then the idea is that if you really, how can you do that? Then that child soul that they will call will not be interested in Krishna consciousness, it will be interested in love. Because they were conceived out of love. So they're going to be, you're going to attract a soul that love is their intrinsic quality. Right? Now, if they are conceived out of the Garbhodhan, then their nature is that of following the rules. And if you're doing it because you want to please Krishna, then you get a devotee who knows how to follow the rules. This is science. This is not chance. This is direct science. So then this kind of thing then needs to be seriously considered. You know? That's the point. Otherwise, it's not scientific, it's simply mental speculation. That's what Prabhupada says. You have some, without, that's a philosophy. They're saying all you need is love, right? I mean, I heard that back in the 60s. But unfortunately, the guys that sang the songs, you know, half of them are dead. You know? So, I'm not sure that it did any benefit, right? I mean, outside the devotee community, in the contemporary world, the young people laugh at the hippies. They think hippies are a joke. They think they're the weirdest, useless, most lazy, you know, funky, dirty people that they've ever heard about. They think they're funny. They laugh at them. Of course, the hippies thought that they were something great, spiritual, wonderful. We discussed that at the beginning of the class. You know, they were a useless bunch of people, absolutely useless. That's why it says Lord Chaitanya starts with the most fallen. So Prabhupada started with what? The guys off the streets of, you know, the scum of society. That's where they were situated socially. Right? The Bowery was not known as the, you know, high end of society. I think you have to go to the other end of the island, to the other side. You know, they were on the lower east, you got to go to the upper west. Then you're talking about high society. Right? So, therefore, Lord Chaitanya says the most fallen, we can understand they were the most fallen. Therefore, the philosophy is also the most fallen. But because they had given up the rules of the normal society, and were open for anything that came along, that then they made that endeavor, or they took that interest. But even then, it's only by the grace of the Lord. Still, Agyata Sukriti is there. You know, you can describe the social phenomena through that, but factually, it's still Agyata Sukriti. Prabhupada created the fortune of the devotees. They didn't deserve it. He created it. Like that. If they deserved it, they wouldn't have been born in America. They would have been born in India in good Vaishnava families. They weren't. They were born in the streets of America. So they didn't deserve it. But Prabhupada made their fortune. Like that. So we can understand that these kind of things, they sound nice. They sound wonderful. They feel good. You know, but that's not enough. Is it feeling good for Krishna? Spiritual world is your happiness is Krishna's happiness. When Krishna's happy, you're happy. That's the only consideration. Right? The material world, our happiness is based on us being happy. Right? So now, in the spiritual world, because their desire to be happy is Krishna, they're naturally happy. So in the material world, so, and Krishna means his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes. Therefore, the whole thing is considered Krishna. So in Krishna's devotees, everyone's pleased, you're pleased. In the material world, then, we want to be pleased. Now we may be gracious and extend that, you know, being pleased to others. You know, our close friends, our relatives, what's dear to us, then when they are pleased, then we're pleased. But still it's based on our pleasure. Right? Well, the spiritual world is based on Krishna's pleasure. Right? So now, how this is combined, so this is then where the bridge between these two is the rules of sadhana bhakti. Right? That is where the rule on what pleases Krishna then comes into the thing of I want to please myself. So the sinful person wants to please himself. The pious person then wants to follow the rules. But by following the rules, they want to please themselves. But they know they'll get a better result. Right? You know, I'd rather perform Garbhadan because then I'll get a pious soul. Much easier to raise a pious soul than an impious one. Right? But then, if you go further, then there is the thing is, okay, we want to please Krishna through following those rules. You know, or let's say no. First would come by following the rules that pleases Krishna. Then next is I want to please Krishna, but in my conditioned state I do that through following the rules. Right? And then that will bring us to the platform of going beyond the rules. That will bring us to the platform of Sarvadharma. That'll bring us beyond that. So that when we come to that platform, then you come to Aslishya Vahapada Natamkiyashtra. So that's the stage. So we have to be very careful, because devotees, many times they don't think, because it sounds good or feels good, but it doesn't mean that it's right. Right? There's the idea, if it sounds good, feels good, it's right, you know. Right? That's the modern thing. I feel it's right, you know. I think this is going to work out. I feel it's right. I feel it's right. Based on what? That's another thing. But that feeling of rightness should be there. That's part of the process. But not on its own. It's the last consideration. What is given by the, what is pleasing to the Lord, what is given in the Shastras, is followed by the authorities, what's given to us by our Acharyas, within that what feels right, that's what I should be doing. But to just start from it feels right, then you're starting from the platform of material consideration. My happiness, which we call love, but is lust. And when that goes back to its original pure form, that's called love for Krishna. Then it's Krishna's satisfaction. And when that perverts, then it's my satisfaction. That's called lust. Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. So it's a science, so people should be aware of it. And then within that, then they can be happy. You had something you want to say? No? Last point then.
I wanted to say your comment was, see, a devotee usually prepare when you do some activity. There's a preparation before that. So if somebody wants to start real life, then he has to prepare what kind of children he wants to have. So for this need auspicious time, means there are different times for different kind of children. And also other thing that in this way the Brahmanas get involved also, so then you get some spiritual input in the whole thing. So Garbhadhana, that's why it's quite important also, because you have to ask some Brahmanas to...
He's making the point. Another aspect is that for Garbhadhana you need a proper time for that, then you need to approach Brahmins. From that then you'll get, you know, proper instruction, association, you'll get... All these things are there. Because for... Prabhupada mentions, for the higher orders, there's no secrecy like that. So it's not a problem of that. Secret means there's something going on that's not proper. Right? Like that.
Also, when they plan, they have an idea of what kind of children they're going to have.
Yeah,
so then that's
true. Also another point.
Just matching to
it. Another point he's making is that then, by planning, then you get the child you want. Ayurveda mentions that. Husband and wife should discuss what kind of child they want. You know, not blue-eyed, blonde-haired, you know, not like that. This means, what is the character of the child? Because that is what is in the subtle, right? Means the physical is going to be according, you know, very close to the appearance of the parents. But the mentality, that is what one has influence on. So by contemplating what kind of child, then husband and wife are thinking of the same thing, they have the same direction. Then you get a child that has is one pointed. Otherwise, much of the time, because the parents think differently, you get a child that doesn't know which direction to go. The natures of the parents are different, their idea, you know, of conception is different, the results of that is different, so then the kid can't figure out who they are. It's quite common. So then, and you find those parents where they're both very similar, the child is also very similar, very focused, like this. So then, these considerations are important. Okay, so then we'll end here. Vrintarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaura Premanandini.